Okay, let me tell you a little bit now about another place that we went to recently, a couple of years ago, Titan. And of course, this is, takes us back to Cassini-Huygens. My role in Cassini was associated, before I became director of science, with building an instrument for the mothership, for the Cassini orbiter. But of course, right from the very beginning, we divided responsibility between Europe and the United States. The United States would build the mothership, Europe would build the lander, not to land on Saturn, but to land on Titan. And I have to tell you, 20-odd years ago, when we said we wanted to land on Titan, most people said, why? Why don't you want to land on Saturn? Well, NASA had already sent a probe into Jupiter, and we figured Saturn would not be so different. Titan is extremely different. It's extremely different and extremely the same. The atmosphere on Titan is not unlike the atmosphere in this room here, mainly made of something called nitrogen. 80% of the atmosphere here is nitrogen. It's got some unpleasant stuff in the atmosphere, methane and all sorts of compounds of carbon, hydrogen and nitrogen, the sort of thing that your cars spew out and give you smog in hot weather in a town like Melbourne. It means we could never know what was on the surface of Titan because we couldn't see through the smog. But equally well, we knew it was an important place because nitrogen is the basis of only one other atmosphere, namely the Earth's. This is actually like the early Earth, because for the first billion years of its life, there was very little oxygen in the Earth's atmosphere. The oxygen was leached out of the rocks with time. Titan is like a prebiotic atmosphere. It's like the early Earth. So it made it a wonderful place to go. We got there, as you may know. The temperature at the surface is minus 179 Celsius. It's kind of cold. Anyone here in the oil or natural gas business will recognize the temperature. It's the temperature at which methane can be solid, liquid, and gas. This is another feature which you can compare with the Earth. Titan's surface is close to what's called the triple point of methane. Earth's equilibrium temperature at the surface is close to the triple point of water. Think about it. On the Earth, it's not hard to find water in gaseous form, in liquid form, and in solid form. So the temperature has to be near the triple point of water. Water is fundamental on the Earth. It drives meteorology, the weather. And indeed, we wondered, would there be a methane-driven meteorology on Titan? And meteorology, although it's a bit of a nuisance, in fact, of course, you probably don't realize there's much water involved in meteorology right now in Australia, but the rest of the planet, it rains. But let me tell you about rain. It's when water comes out of the sky, it evaporates, goes up, makes clouds, comes down again. I know you've all forgotten about it, but it's... We Britons know a lot about it. And so, was there methane rain on Titan? Was there methane ice on Titan? Well, the answer was, happily, yes. You could see, as we came down through the clouds, you could see rivers, riverbeds, very clearly. And I thought, you know, for 20 years we've been talking about this, and I never absolutely was sure we were right. And you get this incredible sense of wonder that for once something you said is correct. And that's a great feeling for a scientist, particularly a planetary scientist. I mean, the planets have proved planetary scientists wrong so many times. Titan came up trumps. It still gave us a shock. We didn't expect the surface to look like this. You see these things that look like pebbles here? They're actually water, dry. They were obviously very dry because you're at minus 179 Celsius. They're like, it's actually like rocks. It'd be rock hard. And in fact, here is probably, you see this, there's a line across this one right here. That's probably where mankind first made its mark on Titan, because Huygens had a little protruding sensor at the bottom. It's very likely it hit that boulder edge on and cracked it open. So that's the first mark of mankind changing the environment of Titan. Okay. This is like a dry riverbed. And in fact, once we were down on the surface, the heat of Huygens seeped into the surface and we could actually watch. It must have rained methane recently, because there was liquid methane that then evaporated and we could detect the gas coming up out of the surface. Thank you, God, we were right. And it really was, it meant we had a brand new world that worked in ways we'd only speculated about. It was a magical moment. It's a very strange looking place. This is a fisheye lens view from a few kilometers high looking down. This is the next slide. Gives you a more traditional view, a panoramic view. It's a very strange world with mountains. In fact, there are volcanoes. And in a sense, having been there once, we want to go back again. We do go back very regularly with Cassini. Cassini overflies Titan regularly, once every, at least every 40 days, and sometimes as often as every 20 days. And it uses Titan to sort of kick itself around the Saturn system. It uses Titan as a sort of a billiard cue. So Titan, we're working on. We're discovering new things about it every day. It is an important place. Huygens, you can think of as the most distant artifact of human civilization. Well, it's the most distant fixed artifact. That is one we know is there, because there are spacecraft going out into the wide blue yonder, leaving our solar system even. But there it sits. In fact, it's not the way the artist has drawn it there. That gives you the true color of the situation, because it is very dark at Titan. Not just because you've got an absolutely filthy atmosphere above you. It's got all the charm of the atmosphere above Los Angeles. It's full of hydrocarbons and so on. But also it's a long way from the sun. It's 10 times further from the sun than we are, so there is much less sunlight. That will change one day. A billion years from now, the sun, this is written in the stars, the sun will turn into a red giant. It will blow up. The light will shift in wavelength into the red band. It'll become redder and redder. I'm afraid that's curtains for life on Earth. Indeed, it's curtains for the Earth. The Earth will be swallowed by the sun. And I like to think then Titan will warm up. Maybe the oxygen will be leached out of the planet itself. I mean, Titan is made of ice, so there's plenty of oxygen there. You'll then have the right soup. You'll have carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen. Exactly what was there in the primeval soup 3.5 billion years ago, that eventually, after 2.5 billion years, started creating the sorts of things that eventually turned into us. It's kind of fun to do this. You can imagine how we felt after 20 years of labor to get, or 25 years of labor to actually land in this strange world. It was a mixed team, mixed in the sense, male and female, also mixed in the sense of Europeans and Americans. And there was a real cultural problem, because all of us were scientists and engineers. And there is a real problem about being a scientist or an engineer. It's called articulating your emotions. Okay, men may be from Mars and women from Venus, but God knows where the engineers came from. And I, with my friend John Zarnicki, who was the chap who built the surface science package, we were, the morning after we'd landed on Titan, you know, we were sort of tired of saying wow. First of all, it's an American word. And secondly, it doesn't express your feelings. It's just an inadequate thing. And he said, you know, we need poetry. And between the two of us, we were both grammar school boys, and we came up with a poem we could vaguely remember, this brilliant phrase, with a wild surmise. Then felt I like some watcher of the skies when a new planet swims into his ken. And a perfect line, actually, for Titan. Or like stout Cortez when with eagle eyes he stared at the Pacific and all his men, looked at each other with a wild surmise, silent upon a peak in Darien. Darien is Panama, the Panama Isthmus. Those of you with a good education know that it wasn't Cortez who crossed the Isthmus of Panama, it was Balboa. There are also people who didn't know it was written by John Keats, and that included me. And so I said this on television whilst my American colleague was weeping, not because of the poetry, but because of the emotion. And I attributed it to Shelley. I mean, I wasn't far out. And I can tell you, it gets you a lot of emails. If you really want to know if people are listening, deliberately make a mistake like that, and boy, they straighten you out. Okay. So, I don't know if any of you really like poetry or understand it. If you don't like poetry, you may like art. This art is actually a painting. It's one of my favorite paintings, and my brother is a painter. It's actually one of his favorite painters, Caspar David Friedrich, a German romantic painter. And this is the sort of painting my brother does, in fact. The painting also expresses this sense of wonder, looking down on something mysterious, with a sense you've discovered something, you've got it lying in front of you, which is, of course, what the poem says too. This is what the engineers felt, and Keats is the kind of person you require to express the feeling. Okay, much less poetic as you then get to meet people like this. This lady is the head of the company that built Huygens, Alcatel Space. It's a French company. She's called Pascale Cerise. You probably recognize me with a tie on. I wasn't in Melbourne. And this guy runs France. Not very well, but there you are. He's the president of France. Very nice chap, actually. He's got a lot of charm, although I don't think much of his politics. But I assume I'm amongst friends here. And he had the nerve to correct my French, which I thought was... You know, I thought, come on, I'm putting all this effort to speak in your own language, and then you tell me I got the grammar wrong. But anyhow, he said that was his duty to look after the language. Okay. So why do you get to meet people like President Chirac and various other heads of state? And it is because this going out into space, exploring space, really does grab the public imagination. When we go to Mars, when we land on Titan, frankly, we take an awful lot of Europeans with us. They feel they're there with us. And that means politicians have to pay attention to us. We're the lucky ones, those of us working in the space agency. In the words of Oscar Wilde, we're all in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars. We're the ones looking at the stars. But there's a hell of a lot of other people joining in with us, looking at the stars or feeling they're looking at the stars too. It's the reason that I think we're doing something very important. And it's the reason that even the President of France knows he has to talk to us. It's because we're asking questions that we're very privileged to be able to ask. And they're kind of almost... It's very hard to imagine there's a human being alive who hasn't at some stage thought about these questions, maybe then put them on one side. How did the Earth, our solar system, evolve? I mean, you all know the Earth hasn't existed forever. It's existed for about one third of forever, because if you remember, the universe began with a big bang. So for about a third of the time, the Earth has been around, which means for two thirds of the time, it wasn't around. We've come out of that. We came out of the stars, out of the galaxies. Where are we in the universe? Well, we're in a rather obscure corner of it. 400 years ago, we thought we were at the center. I mean, you know, when you look at the intellect that we have gathered in this room, you think, well, this must be the center. No, it isn't. Not even here in Melbourne. Where did life come from? We're often looking for life. You know, well, let's try and get a life. No, where did it come from? Where are we going? Well, I often ask that, but I've got GPS now, so it's a lot easier. And lastly, are we alone? Well, in a sense, no. We're all collective. We all know each other. But you think out there are other things like us or other living entities? Or are we some sort of cosmic mistake? It's an interesting idea. If you remember that every now and again you have a star die and it throws out a vast cloud of gamma rays, which are fatal. If we had a supernova explosion near our solar system, it's not just the end of the solar system, it's the end of us. Maybe we are an aberration. You know, maybe the whole of the universe is physics, and every now and again the physics collapses a star to clean up the universe and get rid of the biology and the chemistry that we are. I don't know. These are questions you can pose now. They're questions where we can throw light on these questions. In the last 40 years during my career, these questions have become ones that really you can add to. You don't answer the question in one line. It's like putting a jigsaw together. But the great thing is we've still got a lot to go. There's a hell of a lot of the jigsaw left. But we are putting it together. And that's why it's a great time to be working in this kind of field.